Welcome to Opacity, a podcast about working in design.
Hey Tom, how you doing
today? Hey Craig, how are you?
Good, good. What's our topic today?
Something that we were talking about a little bit back and forth is the expectation on modern designers. Interesting.
Interesting point, expectations.
I think that as the industry has morphed over the years, typical design roles have changed, so we have to wear many hats. Sometimes we're generalists, sometimes we're specialists, depending on the size and the scale of the companies that we're working in. So I think that's an interesting point to start from.
Tom, how would you describe yourself? Are you a specialist? Are you a generalist? Are you T-shaped? Are you pear-shaped? Are you...
that's a good question. It's something that I kind of wrestle with a lot. I think designers often have that kind of existential kind of crisis of sorts, which is probably just being melodramatic. But there's always this kind of quest to try and label yourself or find your own niche within design. You know, everyone kind of uses similar terms, digital, product, UX, visual, whatever. And you're kind of like, well, I'm a bit of this, and I'm a bit of that. You know, I consider myself to be a kind of a product-focused designer, with skills in visual and UX design. I suppose that's kind of broadly how I would categorize myself. The term T-shaped designer, I think, doesn't do justice to the level of depth that you can have in across a broad range within design. So obviously, I think my specialty or my core skills come from visual communications and stuff like that. But over the years, I've worked with many great people that have helped me build up my chops with UX design, product design, and that kind of thing. So I think I don't consider myself to be a T-shaped, maybe more like an M-shaped or like a pie-shaped, the symbol pie, something like that. More on the generalist side, I'd suspect.
You know, what's the value in like figuring this question out? Like from my experience, every project I'm involved in, definitely every company I'm involved in, but also every project within that company or every client I've worked with in past work, whatever, like any different piece of work, things have changed. The need, the skills you need to bring are different. The expectations of the project are different. And you kind of need to shapeshift, I think, to meet that. So even someone who's not a great researcher, or they don't, let's say not that they're not a great researcher, but that they don't maybe have a deep specialization in research, will conduct research and do the best they can and go based on the things that they've learned and the things that they can pick up and give an honest approach to research that may not be as good as a specialized researcher, but it will serve the end goal of the project. And I know I've been in those shoes before. I don't have formal training in research. I don't have formal training in anything, really. Like it's all learned. So like for me, the question doesn't so much matter. It's like the only time I've found this question to be important is interviewing for jobs, mm-hmm. or like making the case for who you are. So maybe in a job interview, maybe when you're creating your portfolio, like what's the sentence I'm going to put in the hero? Like what's going to be there? Like that's the only time it really comes in, like what is my specialization or what, who am I? Like the identity crisis of who am I? What kind of designer am I? Mm-hmm. Other than that, like in day-to-day work, like I feel like it's a privilege to be able to say I focus in this niche, because a lot of the reality of our work is that we're on very small teams. Maybe we're the only designer and we need to wear hats. And because we need to wear hats, we need to be able to bat both directions, or is that the saying? I don't know. But that we need to have these different skills. And that's part of an expectation of it, is to be able to shape shift a little bit. I haven't thought about what does my T-shape look like in years. Previously, I was a UX designer. What was my T? What was my deep T? And I don't even remember, to be honest. And then I became a product designer, and then my T became UX. Somehow UX was the entirety of it, and now UX was a component of product design. It continuously changes with every new role, with every new company, with everything. Like it just keeps changing. It's like, what's the point in defining it? It's like almost just a personal exercise of like, who am I? And the existential crisis of being a modern designer.
And I think, as you're saying, it's kind of shaped by the type of work that you do. So I came from, after college, working in a kind of agency / consultancy background. So for years, I worked with a company with lots of great designers of different kind of flavors, if you will, but always a really strong focus on UX and user-centered design. But we would often work on, we're smaller teams, so we didn't have the luxury that some bigger companies tend to have now, where you'd have a specialist person who just looks after research, you'd have someone who just looks after, say, the UI or product side of design, and someone else who's UX writer, or those types of things. We had to kind of straddle a few horses. That's what we had to do. So it was out of necessity and the kind of size of the team that we had that you grew these skills because they were required of a smaller team. And I think it stands to you, and you also get a taste of like, what do I really like? Because if you come out of a course in college, you know, someone who researched, probably you tend to see more people kind of like from psychology or that kind of background. When you come out, if you've got a taste of a number of different things, you can kind of say, I actually really enjoy this side of things. From my background, like in visual communications, designers from that kind of side of things tend to want to be more doers. So they tend to want to be the people who, you know, execute on the finished piece. So there's always that element of like in UI or UX product design, or whatever you want to call it, there's always that draw generally towards the visual or the layout side of design. You know, if you get a taste of it from an agency background, you understand, you get a broad taste of different elements, you can choose to go down to go focus more on research or whatever. And I think, you know, when you're doing interviews, and if you have an appreciation for research and for design and all these different things, and testing, analytics, and all the type of stuff, it'll only stand to you, you know, and it'll make it easier, I think, for you to communicate with other people who are doing those things, as opposed to someone who comes in, I just do design, I've got no understanding of what a researcher does, and they're just someone who gets in my way, or that kind of thing, yeah. You know?
My question is kind of like, okay, we have specialized roles, we have generalist roles. The specialized makes sense to me. The generalist feels like it's like a thing that's now because of the situation, but that it won't exist in the future. Mm-hmm. Like industries that are more fully formed, that have been around a long time. This morning, actually, I was listening to a podcast, a really good episode of Without Fail. It's a podcast, a Gimlet podcast by Alex Bloomberg. And he is interviewing Ira Glass, who is the host of This American Life, one of the most well-known national public radio podcasts. And Ira Glass is extremely well known. If you don't know him, check him out. But they were discussing, because they had worked together in the past, they were discussing kind of aspects of producing for radio and the roles. And it wasn't, not that the podcast went into detail, but that it just gave me a little glimpse of something that's been going on for, since radio was invented. When was radio invented? I don't know. For some number of years, let's say 60 years.
That's probably more than that, I think.
Let's say 80 years. Let's say 100 years, just to be 200 years. Something that's been done, and it's been, I assume the early days of radio were a bit scrappy, right? Like they're probably trying to figure out, like, this is a medium that's never existed before. What are we doing? How do we design audio for radio? How do we design audio at all? Like, that's still a question that is being figured out. But that we're like design, especially in this world that we're talking about of digital design, it's very new. Like this is only in the very recent past that this is actually becoming a thing, and like craft within this world is becoming a thing. And like, it seems that the generalist is just because there's less people doing it, we need more generalists because we need you to do more stuff because we don't have anybody else to do it. Mm-hmm. Whereas as people become specialists, then the need for generalists sort of starts to fade away, or those generalists just become managers, or they have a different role where they're meant to oversee things, or they become VPs of design or whatever. Like they then oversee the specialist doing the hard work.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know.
Okay, yeah.
It's a premise that I just thought of.
Yeah, yeah. I think a lot of people that are more suited than, as you're talking about, people who go through their career and start off as designers or whatever and maybe move up into the role of managers or leaders and that kind of thing. Like that is a natural progression for some designers. It's not for everybody. I think, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I think a lot of designers still consider themselves to be doers and they want to be doers, whereas not everyone sees themselves as a manager. It might seem like a natural progression, but again, I don't think it works for everybody. But people, I think, who come into the industry, you know, specifically UX, with a kind of more of a business type mind, I think they're probably a bit more bit more kind of management or leadership material. Is that a fair assumption?
I have honestly no idea. I mean, like, if you asked me a year ago, what's like your career trajectory, like the sort of designer, senior designer, principal designer, or this kind of design specialist would have been my answer. And maybe it's not that it's not now, but that based on like some recent events, I sort of found myself in more of a managerial role in a product team, managing other people. And the even though management was something I like shunned and said, I will never go back, because I was a manager previously not in design, but in another industry. And it's like, no, I never want to do that again. I hated it. I hated management. It was miserable. And I got into design partly because of that misery.
Yeah.
But also, I think there was an interesting shift for me in thinking about, okay, you're a designer, and now you have a role that is either fully or partially management. And like, how a background in design can actually like really be an asset to bring to that, like being a designer and then going off to other types of disciplines that are maybe not what you would call design, but you're really designing things. You're intentionally designing teams and structures and processes and the way things work and dealing with problems. Like, it's pure design really, like in terms of problem solving. So I think that being a designer coming into a role like management, or like, you know, somebody who founds a company or runs an agency, their own design agency. Like, I don't know a lot of people, maybe you'd know a few people who run design agencies. How much design are they actually like design, like capital D design, are they doing?
Yeah.
Like, they're doing design, I'm sure, every day, but they're designing their business to be successful, probably. Maybe they're upset about the fact that they maybe don't spend as much time in the weeds of doing the design work, like actually producing stuff.
Yeah, I think that's probably a common complaint, I think, from a lot of creative people who find themselves in a role where they might grow a studio from a small amount of people to something larger, and they find themselves having to step away from the day-to-day doing of the design and more the communicating, dealing with clients, business developments, sales, and all that type
of
thing.
It's exhausting. Like, on one hand, my argument of this is design, like it's pure design, it's problem solving, like, yeah, I agree with that, but I also disagree with myself in that, like, it's different. It's inherently creative to try to solve problems regardless of what they are, but there's also something different about solving like people problems, solving organizational problems versus solving problems in like designing a product or designing something, a thing, like a physical, quote unquote, physical, i.e. digital/physical thing. Like, they're different. And I feel that in a role that I'm in now, because so much time is sucked into the design of the management structure and the process and the ops, the design ops, also like product ops, I guess, is the thing. And I miss like those aspects, and like trying to get that back is like a mission.
But you've got a seat at the table now. Seat at the table, air quotes.
It's interesting, because like, is that the trade-off? Do designers who want, quote unquote, a seat at the proverbial table, they need to then become management, and like therefore they hand over the staff of design, get the crown of management, and then therefore now they sit at the table to represent the world of design.
It's like quite the picture you painted there.
But is that a trade-off that happens to get leadership, or to have leadership in a product, in a company, in whatever? Like, it seems like it's a weird thing to give up to become a leader, and to give up that aspect of your work and like professional identity in a way.
I think it is a kind of a natural progression. It's kind of like the apprentice and the master, you know, like at some stage everyone is an apprentice and they're learning their craft, and then you get to a stage where, oh, I've got someone underneath me now, so it makes sense for me to take them under my wing, let them learn by doing, but then ease off a little bit. And so I think there's a natural kind of progression there that generally tends to happen. I think most companies that have senior designers, they tend to step back a bit. Maybe they turn into more of a kind of an overarching design direction role with less experienced people that are kind of working underneath them. So they're less hands-on, but maybe still have a creative steer on what's being put together. And that might be enough for for some people. I think anyone that has a lot, a very experienced and has taken a step back, there's always, anytime I talk to them, there's always that element of like, oh, I do miss that. Like, you know, when I do, I don't get to do proper like hands-on design a lot, but when I do, I love it. That kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like even when it's miserable, like just like real basic, maybe production work that just needs to be done to get something out the door. Like that's enjoyable for the person who misses those good old days. But yeah, expectations, like there's a lot to talk about in terms of expectations. I feel like one aspect that's maybe front and center for us in our world of designing in digital spaces is the technical side. Mm-hmm. The old question, should designers code? Should designers be fluent in code? Should designers be conversant in technical things? To what extent we should invest time not in doing design, but in doing development. The also the trade-off in that, like if for a designer who is more leaning in the technical side, like what are they trading off by doing that? What are they gaining? What are they trading off? Like I feel like everything's about trade-offs. Like, so if you go the management route, you're trading things off.
Yeah.
If you have, you focus on technical sides, there's going to be a trade-off. There has to be. Mm-hmm. Not everyone can be a unicorn. There's some unicorns out there, but actually no, unicorns are unicorns because they don't exist, right? Like that's the point of the unicorn, is that no one can be fully stacked from design to development to everything, and also be able to speak the language of the business that underlies all of this and keeps the lights on.
I think that you need to have enough understanding of what you're talking about with different members of the team. So design has a big impact on business, so you should understand enough about business to see the value of what design can bring to the business, the impact that it can have. If you're dealing with technology, you should have enough understanding to be able to converse with them, I think anyway, and not be completely, I mean, you don't need to throw yourself completely in coding. It depends on the individual, but I think your time and your talents are probably best spent on honing a more specialist side of your craft. I suppose that's harking back to the generalist versus specialist thing.
Yeah.
But you can't do everything, you know?
I'd say from my experience, because I came into design with zero technical understanding, like not even, like the question of should I learn to code was like not even in my radar.
Right,
like
okay.
What was on my radar was like
how
much money can I make in how much time? No, but like what was on my radar, because it was UX design I was trying to get into, I saw the word design, that meant to me visual stuff. Like that at that point, it was like my lack of a background in visual design, graphic design, even UI design, like those things were the areas I needed to beef up in order to make my portfolio stand out so that I could get a job in UX. Like that was not a correct premise, I don't think. Mm-hmm. But the idea of technical ability, the idea of learning to code, was not even on my radar. And that's just something I missed. Mm-hmm. But in the first job, it was very like immediately clear that that was something that I needed to know. Because I would sit in meetings with teams of developers and just everything would be flying over my head.
Yeah.
These are words I had never even thought about, like never even knew they existed, these words, you know? So like it was a big hurdle like to get over. But it's also been one of the most useful things I think to have, because once you even today I wouldn't say that I'm that good at it, but it is something I make an effort to understand and be able to speak as best I can in conversations with development teams. All the people I work with are developers. I don't actually work with any designers at the moment, so it's a requirement,
absolutely, yeah,
to be able to work with them and to understand them and to have our languages, you know, to be able to converse productively. Fortunately, the team is great in doing that with me. But to me, that's like, it's very valuable to learn to speak that language. Would it be valuable to learn development, learn everything about development? You know, yeah, that'd be awesome. It'd be great if I could code. It'd be great if I could implement every project that I wanted to work on and not be limited by that. It'd be great if I could fly. It'd be great if I could, you know, go anywhere in the world without worrying about the cost of the flight. Like, there's a lot of things I would like to do in life.
Not all practical.
But they're not all practical. Like, they all take time.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a trade-off in the investment of time to learn development, like learning anything. If I wanted to go back and do an MBA because I think business is where I should focus myself and mm-hmm. be a designer who is trained in business, formally trained in business, that's a trade-off that I'm probably not going to make anytime soon, right?
I totally agree, yeah. And I think you can liken it to even a musical instrument. You know, you could be very proficient on a guitar, and then all of a sudden you find your situation and you're like, maybe I'll join a band and play drums. You pick up drumsticks and you hit it and you're like, okay, I'm awful at this. In order for me to get to a standard that's good enough, I would have to put lots and lots of time in, which I can't do. So I'll just focus on getting better at guitar, or maybe I'll move on to bass or something. That's which is more like, it's an easier transition from guitar to bass. That's not an exact metaphor. Okay, go on.
But
or is it guitar in your case?
Well, also the band kind of analogy is great. If I'm a lead singer and I have, I don't know if I could be a lead singer and not have good rhythm, mm-hmm. but if I'm like consistently off rhythm or like not hitting cues or whatever, yeah. like then I can't work with my drummer or the entire team of the band, right? Yeah. So like I'm a singer. I don't need to learn to play guitar. I don't need to learn to play drums, but I need to learn what they need to know, or like we need to be able to speak the same language so that we can be a coherent team. So, but some singers will be really good guitarists. Some singers will be amazing drummers. Yeah. Whatever. Like some people are full stack musicians.
Yeah, man.
But you don't need to be, but you do need to be conversant. So that's my stance, but
yeah.
it's a very like controversial.
I don't think it's that controversial. I think it's
a controversial topic because I don't know. I guess we're like walking the middle route. Like,
yeah.
Like it's the wishy-washy middle zone, which I agree with, but it's like, it's not one way or the other versus some are like, no code. Yes. Everyone, all designers, of course they should learn to code. Like, of course.
Well, I'm of the opinion that learn enough to be able to communicate, you know. So if you're, as your analogy with the singer, like you need to, your rhythm, you don't need to understand all the beats that are being played with a drummer or all the licks and solos and stuff and riffs that are being played with the guitarist, but there's a common pulse, a rhythm, a BPM that if you can lock in with them, you can, there's a universal language between you that you're all conversing in, and you just need to be able to stay on that, you know, and communicate that way.
Now, Tom, you've been on, I think both of us have been on in-house teams as well as agency side.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in terms of expectations that you found different between, you're in an in-house environment right now and previously you were agency. Was there any like stark difference that you see in terms of expectations between the two?
So, yeah, I think that, well, there definitely are differences. I think when you're working in an agency, the engagements tend to be shorter, even though our particular agency had kind of longer multi-year kind of partnerships with our clients. So you might be working on something for 6 months, or you could be working on it for a longer term. Traditional agencies, I don't think they require that kind of like deep understanding of a business to be able to go in there and stay with the client. But what we did is we would do that. We'd find ourselves, we were an external agency, but we would also embed with the teams. So we'd be embedded with their in-house team. So it could be a really big telco or a financial institution. And what I found really useful about that was it was different because you came in, you kind of had a bit more clout because you're like, oh, these are the external guys. And sometimes I felt bad for in-house people because they might be saying, we've been saying this for ages, but no one listens to us. But you come in because they're paying, you know, extra money for you guys to be coming in as external designers. And they're listening to everything you say. So there's that, which is kind of a negative, I suppose, from the in-house perspective. But being an external team as well, you've got perspective. That's not, you're not shrouded in all the internal, or mired in all the internal politics and that kind of thing. So I think there's definitely pluses and minuses to each. Currently now in a product design role with a team. So it is different. The pace tends to be different. You know, but I think that's just the thing, like the difference between working as in an agency versus a product where it's a longer game. It's a marathon as opposed to sprints, you know, that type of thing. And they're kind of incremental changes over time, as opposed to working on something for a short period of time, going, ta-da, here you go, here's your thing. Do you love it? You know? So how about you?
Yeah, kind of similar in some ways, being that the agency I was with previously, I was more embedded with the client. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of a nice little zone between your external. So you're a bit guarded, you're a bit shielded from the drama of the internal organization. You could just come in, like you said, like some clout. People like, look at you, oh, you're a consultant coming in to tell us how to do better. Mm-hmm. That's great. But then you can go home and not have to worry about all their internal drama and their structures and their reshuffling and all of these things. It was, especially with bigger companies. But I did like the ability to have an ongoing relationship with a client over a period of time and get to know their business, their people, all of those things to then figure out kind of where this one client I was with, research was not something that they had a lot of in the past. So, you know, I was able to kind of bring in first version of some user research and testing of some of their products. And that was great for them. It was eye opening, even though they were like a big brand, everybody knows them. Mm-hmm. They didn't have that. And like, it was great to be able to do that. And then to be able to understand more about the company, the organization, and like open up a new kind of door to something that could grow into something in the future. Like, that was exciting. Mm-hmm. But I think the in-house is more of a, it's more of a slog, right? It's more of a extended, it's going to go on for eternity, or at least as long as you're potentially eternity.
I think I've definitely found with working as an external agency that comes in is, as we said before, you've got more clout. Generally, there's a capital expenditure put behind what you want to do. Someone wants to make a big impact and they generally tend to have a bigger budget to do it. So yeah, I think it's easier to make higher level decisions, or, you know, the kind of grander changes, transformations, if you will, within a company, and not have to worry about the day to day kind of the nitty gritty, the day to day stuff that is probably something that you skim across if you're at a shorter engagement and you're working as an external agency, which is something that I liked as when I was in an external agency for many of the years that I was there, the variety of working on different projects, going from financial industries to telcos, to agricultural businesses, to, you know, IoT products for the likes of Honeywell and stuff like that, and fire and safety and that kind of thing. Really interesting projects. But at the same time, what you found is that you're kind of skimming along, coming in with big ideas, but not getting to see them completely through. You're moving on to the next project. This is personally how I found it. And I found that after a while, that variety started to work against what I really wanted. I thought I liked a little variety, but then I actually realized I actually want to see that through, you know, because you're kind of watching from a distance. The budget runs out, you move on to the next project. Whereas if you're in-house or if you're working on a product team, you're living it. It's your daily, it's what you're focusing on day to day. And you get to see and refine and spend all the time in those little details that you, in the less experienced me personally, would have found kind of boring. Oh, let someone else figure out those things. But now it's actually those little details are, those nuances are kind of more interesting, you know, as part of, you know, I always want to steer something and transform something, but just having coming in, you know, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, making a big splash and then leaving just doesn't have the same kind of impact for me, or, you know, interest in me.
I wonder if there's a way to, there's definitely a way, but thinking about, you know, this dichotomy of the agency that things are consistently changing. It's sort of maybe a little bit higher level. It's has different drivers because there's a specific timeline set by the client. There's a budget. There's also a desire, you know, to extend that relationship mm-hmm. into the future,
yeah.
propose more things, yeah. get more business. Like, that model produces, I think, different types of design. Not saying it's bad. Not saying the designers doing it are bad. I'm sure it's all largely good. But the model, the idea behind that model is a bit different,
yeah.
As opposed to the product team, which, I mean, you still have to answer for the time you're spending because that's coming out of the cost of running this company that is trying to sustain itself based on a product, which is a challenging thing.
It kind of feels a bit more honorable, I suppose, in-house, because you've got skin in the game, and it's like you know, it's your home, for want of a better term, and you're helping to level it up. And you've got, you know, you're going to be there for the longer run than someone coming along and just going, I'm an interior designer, change all these colors, do all this, it'll look amazing. Okay, bye. Come back to me when you've got more budget, you know, that type of thing. Not to discredit interior designers now. I think that a lot of time when you're a consultant or you're coming in as the external agency, people see you in that light. Oh, okay, we'll do this project. And then are they just going to plan on getting their hooks into us and, you know, milk us dry, that type of thing? And I know lot of larger consultancies would have that kind of name. I think our previous, the previous company that I worked for, we're pretty, you know, we'd call out things and go like, you know, you don't need us anymore, really. You know, we'd be honest enough with them. We'll say, we can help you here, or we can help you build up your capability. A lot of companies we dealt with didn't have in-house teams, so we'd actually help hire them and replace us, because that was what was what they needed to do.
Yeah. And I wonder if, and I was trying to think about this before and I got sidetracked, but thinking about how can a product team, in-house product team, be more agency-like in how they run and how, and their relationship with the overall company, mm-hmm. and how, like, because that, I feel like that draw of having projects change every couple of months, having the things you're working on, like having some diversity there, new problems to solve, things like that. Like that's, to me, that's a draw of the agency side of things. Yeah. Like it can be a reason to go into the in-house side, but also it's still a nice thing. I think creative industry people like that change every couple of months, and maybe overgeneralization, but probably somewhat true. So I wonder how product teams can be shaped more like, more having more change, more diversity, more, you know, and it's probably on the team themselves, the design team or the designers within the team, to be kind of proactive about mm-hmm. about that, like looking at the company as a client almost, yeah. proposing new work that should be done. It's not that, you know, we're not proposing it because we want more business. It's proposing it, well, we want a job, so we should propose good work, but we also have this deeper relationship with our product that we're working on. But I think one of the flip sides of in-house teams, somewhat of a tendency to get too deep into the narrative of what this company is or what this product is. I think there's something I was trying to think through recently of like, what's the competitive advantage of being an outsider, of being someone who doesn't know anything about what you're doing? Even like, you join a company, you don't know the industry they work in, you don't know the product they have, you don't know anything. What is the competitive advantage for that? Like, it's, ignorance is generally not something we want, but I don't know if ignorance is the right word, but we'll go with it. Ignorance in this case, like, is there an advantage to it? I think there is. Like, for myself, every job I've had has been in a new space, and it's, you have to get ramped up, but there's that moment, the first couple months on the job, when you're trying to figure out everything, but you have fresh eyes that you can see things that yeah. no one else can see. And I think that is a competitive advantage, and something I'm not sure companies really see as an advantage. They want people who are well-versed, because it's maybe easier to onboard them. It's easier to get them up and running, and they can run with stuff and not need everybody to hold their hands. But there's definitely, in my opinion, an advantage to some ignorance.
I agree. I think like fresh eyes and the kind of a beginner's mindset as well, you know, coming to something fresh, because you may have mentioned earlier, like you can get indoctrinated into in-house teams, or, you know, especially if it's a big, large company and you become part of the furniture and part of the culture, whether that's a good or a bad thing can rub off on you. And you can just, you know, it's the classic, you can't see the wood for the trees type thing. Whereas someone who's fresh, who and has the perspective of working with different clients and isn't kind of marred by all the internal politics or any of that type of stuff, can just look at things, call them as they see them, you know. And that's, I suppose that's another thing as well. If you're an external consultant or agency coming in, I found in the past, you can be more honest and you don't really have the same repercussions of not being mean or, you know, being unprofessional about things, but just being able to go, listen, you're focusing on completely the wrong thing. You really need to fix this, or else your business is going to go, you know, you're going to lose clients to competitors because they're doing a better job. Whereas it's a lot harder to say that to a CEO if you're in the company, you know, it's an uncomfortable conversation, but then that's what they hire you for, you know? So my previous company, it was more strategic project. So we could say like, this is what you're hiring us for.
No, I totally see that. Like it's a real, this is probably not the right phrase, but speaking truth to power, you know, there's a certain privilege with being so comfortable with yourself and your position, whether it's your position as an employee or position as a consultant, that you have no qualms about saying things like you see them. Mm. There's a lot of cases that that's not something people feel comfortable with. And there's always a trade-off of, should I say this? Should I hold back? What if it's not the right thing? Am I willing to say the wrong thing that may cost me my job, or at least the respect? Or, and like having those limitations on designer are problematic. I think creatively are problematic, because once there's a filter put up, then the ability to actually be a creative, I think are hindered. And that's definitely the case in, I think, in in-house teams. And maybe that's like one of another one of the advantages of agency side work, is that in the case that you have that freedom and you are looked at as a as an industry expert and you're coming in to give a service, and your service is in asking hard questions and pushing the limits, that's an exciting world to be in. And in a perfect world, that's how your product company can run.
Yeah.
But it's not always the case, right? Like it's much more difficult when, you know, if you push the wrong buttons, that could put your future in the company at risk, potentially. Like, or depending on the leadership, that could be a reason to promote you and to give you more responsibility because you're so outspoken and pushing limits, and that's like, that's seen as an asset. So it's really maybe dependent on the company culture that, you know, it's really tough to say. I think both in-house agency worlds have their definite advantages, definite different disadvantages.
I know some in-house teams as well that work with larger companies, and they're kind of seen like an in-house creative or external agency, if you will. So they basically don't spend, they kind of have that model where they move around projects and they have clout. And I think that's the clout is a big thing, really. Like, you know, do we have the power to make any change, or do we just have to work with what we've got, roll with the punches, and just, you know, work with what we have and don't have the power to make those big changes that are required.
Yeah, it's interesting how much of this comes down to kind of company culture and the structures in place, because like that's a structural thing to have like a sort of in-house agency.
Mm-hmm.
That's a decision made by maybe a design leader or someone, an executive in the company. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Probably different in every case, but it's a very cultural thing to that's how we're going to run design, as this sort of independent agency that is here to push us in the right direction. Like very, that's like a very kind of interesting sort of visionary kind of approach to it, probably.
Absolutely.
You
need a company that values design.
Yeah. And an agency, like the cultural side of an agency is huge, right? Like if your agency has a very weak culture, or a culture that doesn't really value design, or design is just sort of there because it can bring in some extra money, like that's a thing that's going to limit you as a designer. But if it's an agency that's invested in it and invested in the promotion of design and the promotion of whatever aspect of design they serve or they have services in, that'll influence as well. So it's interesting because we started off this conversation talking about the expectations of the designer, and now we're here talking about in-house and agency teams. I mean, we got there, like it's related, but it's a bit different.
And we're talking a lot at the moment about, like, you know, UX and product design, but we're also going to be planning on bringing in designers of all different disciplines, from industrial design to you know, architecture and etc. So watch this space.
Yeah, no, we're excited to continue this conversation. Would love to hear your thoughts. Thanks so much for listening, and make sure to check us out on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be available there. Subscribe to Opacity and let us know what you think. Thanks a lot.